tuned in to CJLO 1690 AM Radio Montreal.
You're listening to CJLO News. The legendary abandoned Empress Theater on Sherbrooke and Old Orchard is going to be partially demolished and converted into an art space after years of attempts to revive the building. The Empress Theater, built in 1927, was an iconic Egyptian revival-style theater that once catered to NDG's artistic movie-going community. But since 1992, the building has been sitting inactive and decommissioned, with water damage eating away at its interior, while the stone sarcophagi and scarabs look out onto the street through a chain-link fence. Promises to rebirth this building have been continuous since its decommissioning, but now the members of Ensemble Montréal are acting to turn the space into an outdoor arts center. The building is now set to be demolished, with only the facades facing Sherbrooke and Old Orchard left standing. The space between will be converted into a courtyard for community events, including outdoor movie screenings. This timeline is ambitious. They plan to have phase one of this project completed by fall of 2027. Here is Côte des Neiges NDG Mayor Stephanie Valenzuela.
Concretely, this first phase is something that we are capable of doing under our administration without any other partnership.
Well, the city is allocating $10 million for this first phase. Later phases will include collaboration with private developers to build a new building on the lot as well. Scott McLeod is an artist in NDG and a spokesperson for the Empress Cinema Collective, a group that has been advocating for updates to the theater for decades now. He has fond memories of attending the cinema in the 80s.
It was an outing for people of all ages, all generations at that time, and it was amazing to have something like that so close.
The Empress Theater Collective understands the need to destroy everything except the facade, but they are uncertain about what private development might bring to the area in the future. McLeod hopes that the city stays dedicated to including some art spaces while acknowledging housing is a top priority.
Yes, we want to keep the historic reference of it being this deco-Egyptian period piece, one-of-a-kind cinema in the facade. I accept that, you know, losing everything inside, but maintaining arts and culture and communities keep something alive, and we need art and culture. Without it, I think we're suffering.
For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
Good morning. Death of the Mid-Range family, you are on CJLO 1690. It's 9 a.m. and it's time for your favorite meeting of the week. Death of the Mid-Range, we are back. I'm your host, Libasi Kurela Jalo. I'm terribly sorry. I've been lacking. It's been about, man, 3 weeks I ain't been here. It's been hard to get to the studio on Monday mornings. But I gotta say, today is a one. It's a beautiful day outside. If you live in Montreal, man, we've been blessed with the sun. And I got a real special episode for y'all today. I got two guests in the studio, so I'm squatted up today. And we're gonna get into their favorite teams, which are the Clippers and the Spurs, which, you know, are both doing respectively well in their own conferences. Nothing to be jealous about from a Wizards fan. Of course, I am not jealous at all. But talking about the Wizards, before we get into the whole episode and dive into their teams, I do want to talk about a couple players of the week. And this time I'll turn it into more of debuts of the week. We had some marquee players play their first games of the season, even though it's really late. Jason Tatum doing his best Kobe impression and coming back super, super early from this Achilles injuries. And there was like a lot of talk on NBA Twitter, just NBA discourse in general about, oh, like, is it going to work next to Jaylen Brown? Does Jason Tatum have to be a full-on second option now? Will there be beef or whatnot? And so far, so good. Two games, he's been back, two wins against the Mavs, who are kind of tanking, and then the Cavs, which is a really quality win. And I felt like Tatum has been just like naturally getting back into the flow of the offense, which isn't really a surprise with Joe Mazzulla really running a tight ship over there. It's been really impressive just him coming back, kind of feeling it out. He's definitely has taken kind of a more of a secondary role behind Jaylen Brown, but been pretty cool to see him back, and I'm happy to see the Boston Celtics at full strength, and I'm excited to see what they can do in the Eastern Conference. And now to talk about the real debut that we all care about, the actual All-NBA player, the actual superstar that people want to see. I ain't gonna lie. Mr. Trae Young, welcome to DC. First of all, Trae, welcome to DC for real this time. Trae Young played his first game on Thursday of last week, and I almost shed a tear. I'm not gonna lie, guys, I almost shed a tear. It was beautiful. I ain't gonna lie, it was beautiful to have a point guard who can handle the ball, pass it at this level. I don't even think his stats were crazy, and we lost by like 20. But you know what? The arena was bumping when he made that first layup on Filipowski. The arena was bumping when he made his first no-look assist to the corner to Trae Johnson. The arena was bumping, and I ain't gonna lie. This weekend I had a dream about meeting Will Dawkins, the Wizards GM, because I want to thank him for everything that he's done for my organization. I didn't even dream about meeting a player. I want to meet the GM. I want to give him a hug. Tell him thank you, bro. Tell him thank you. But in all seriousness, it means a lot to me. As you guys will see, we'll talk about actual competing teams later on the episode. And for me, at this point, at this juncture of the season, following a tanking team, we're playing our starters like 19 minutes a game, right? And then we got G League dudes coming in. And I respect the grind. I respect the hustle. Sharif Cooper has fully taken advantage of this opportunity. We signed Angel Reese's younger brother, Juju Reese, who's been decent. But definitely at this juncture of the season, it's really hard for me to watch the Wizards because we're throwing out lineups that I never could have expected in my worst nightmares. But it is always fun to see the young guys kind of rocking. And on that note, I'm done yapping about the Wizards being amazing and bumping. I am going to welcome my two guests. Starting with a fellow CJLO brother, my brother Samuel, who is hosting a great show right before this one, and they've been way more consistent than us. What's up, Samuel? How you doing?
Good to be here, man. Great to be back with you. And doing two shows back to back, it's a good time. But no, I'm very honored to be on here. This is a show we took a lot of inspiration from, Anthony and I, when we were starting our own show up. So, you know, a little bit of a surreal moment meeting your heroes. But, it's great to be here, man.
I didn't even tell him to say that, boy. He's just perfect. And to his right, we have, man, I was thinking about an introduction. We probably have the most American-sounding African in the world. If I can welcome my brother Denzel. How you doing, Denzel? How you doing?
What's up, my guy? How you doing?
I'm good, man. It's a debut for Denzel, who hasn't been to the radio, but we are very excited to welcome him. If y'all could both say what fandoms you guys are representing. I see the jerseys. What's up?
Hey.
You want to go?
Oh, sure. So, first of all, my boy Libas, thank you for having me today.
I got you, bro.
Death of the Mid-Range. I've been I've been wanting to come on this show for a minute, so this is an honor for me for sure.
Motion, bro.
Motion.
So sure. Much motion, bro.
Like he said, I mean, Cameroon native, so for sure, like, this is a big step for me. This is my first time on radio, actually, so bear with me.
Yeah. Good to have you.
And today I'm here to represent my squad, my team, the Los Angeles Clippers.
Okay.
Yo,
okay.
All right.
So, who you rocking? Who's on the jersey, bro?
Blake Griffin. You know, arguably a top five. No, we don't talk about that. Let's not get there.
What I say, bro, no controversial take, bro. I said no controversial take.
Hey, you got the wrong one.
Oh, damn. What's up, Samuel? Who you rocking today?
Man, I am blessed to be an NBA fan because I have on my chest the logo of the San Antonio Spurs, man. It is a good time to be a Spurs. We struggled for a few years. Being a Spurs fan in high school was not the best experience, but we're up now.
Yeah. Hey.
Look at me now. Yeah. How about that?
I mean, you are talking to a Wizards fan, so if anybody knows struggle, it's us.
You know this jersey, number 22?
All right.
That's all you know.
All right. It's true. Number 22. Number 22.
Here's a hint. He used to play for you.
He used to play for me?
Ooh. Yeah. For the
Washington Wizards.
Ooh. Number 22?
Was that before or after?
After. He got traded to the Wizards.
He got traded
from
to the
Spurs.
Wizards. Ooh, Malachi Branham.
Yes, sir.
Ooh,
there
ding,
you
ding,
go.
Ding. Oh, my God. You own a Malachi Branham jersey?
That's insane.
I was in the weeds for a few years. I'm not going to lie. I thought he was going to be special. It was, man, that draft class, that 2022 draft class, man. Okay.
I can see. I mean, he played what? He played half a season for us? And Malachi had some, you know, some grit to him.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, yeah, he was. He did. And, you know, it pains me to say this, but I had no faith in Keldon Johnson.
Oh, wow.
I feel that.
I thought he was going to be the KJ replacement. I thought he was going to be this, you know, 3-4, you know, who could, you know, he had a good mid-range game. Yeah. He was, you know, I think already a better defender coming out of college. Like, his three-point shot was definitely not, you know, like coming along as well.
It's gotten a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
It's gotten a lot better. But on that note, you know what? We'll start with you. So, yeah, I'm just curious. You kind of touched on it, but why did you become a Spurs fan?
I really started watching like NBA basketball, like taking it really seriously back in like 2013, 2014.
Yeah.
And I remember like vividly, cause like, I know it was during the summer cause my family never went out to restaurants during like the school year, and being at like a sports bar or something it must've been June, and watching the Spurs play the Heat.
What year?
Like the 2014, it must have been the okay, OG? It must have been the 2014 finals.
Yeah, finals.
Okay. And believe me, I was like 9 years old then. I wasn't locked in back then. Mm-hmm. But like, I remember just watching them play and being like, oh my God, like this is like, I knew what basketball, you know, I played Y basketball growing up, you know, you know, getting in the game early, but like watching them play was just like, it wasn't like it.
That was great basketball too,
especially at that time. I feel like 2014.
That was the last dance.
I never even like really watched basketball like that for like the next few years because you know I was still like nine. But like watching them, I was like, okay, like this is like this is my team. I'm never gonna give up on them. Yeah. But then like I started to really watch them like right around like 2018, 2019, like the DeMar DeRozan, LaMarcus Aldridge years, you know, and then like I said, during high school was a little, you know, DeJounte Murray, Derek White type stuff.
And look at them now.
Rebuild.
Look at them now though. Both these dudes after they got off the team were great.
Yeah.
And you know, so you started locking in after the Kawhi years?
Yeah, pretty much. Like that, like when I really, like I was, you know, I was keeping up the scores, I was keeping up, you know, but I really started to like take basketball, especially the NBA, a lot more seriously around then. I started, you know, watching games, you know, talking ball with my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like really right around when I started, you know, to lock in on the Spurs.
Do you have like a favorite memory?
Oh, man.
Even a favorite tanking memory. I have plenty. I mean, we've only tanked.
I mean, that 2019 series against the Nuggets, seven seed Spurs, two seed Nuggets. Mm. That was a phenomenal series.
Derek White was he's bad. Derek White,
he was incredible. Yeah. No, and I remember how long. It was kind of the beginning of the end because you could tell that, you know, the DeMar LaMarcus core was just not gonna take us anywhere.
Yeah.
But watching them take, you know, the Nuggets, who were, you know, amazing that year, that was like the Jokic breakout year, taking them to seven games in the first round was, you know, a great experience. And then I love DeJounte Murray.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the way he left the Spurs, you know, a little bit rough, but I got nothing but respect for him. And, you know, I got to meet him at Isaiah Thomas's Pro-Am in Tacoma. Yeah.
Wait, what?
It was the summer after he got traded to Atlanta in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
And you know, I just got to say hi. Got a cheeky picture with him. You know, after a game. But no, it was cool. So
nah. But hey, what I respect about DeJounte Murray, just the way he came back with the Pelicans, and he was just like, listen, bro, like everybody been talking, whatnot. I'm here to win. I'm here to get as many wins as we can.
Yep.
And he wants to represent for real. He don't want to sit out. He could have sat out this year, and he didn't want to sit out. But before we keep going, I'm gonna just send y'all Death of the Mid-Range Family first little ad break. Of the day, chill out, take a little break, and you know what? We're not going nowhere. We be right back.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on.
Good morning. Sorry to break up your ad break, but this is Death of the Mid-Range, your future favorite NBA talk show. We help you start off your week right every Monday morning at 9 a.m., bringing you a diversity of episodes on the beautiful sport of basketball. All of this is, of course, on CJLO. We will see you there.
Located in the heart of Little Burgundy, Universal Negro Improvement Association of Montreal presents Unity in the Community. Marcus Garvey once quoted, "A people without the knowledge of their history, origin, and culture is like a tree without roots." Located at 2741 Notre Dame West, from February the 15th to March 15th, join us Sunday afternoon from 3 to 5 for a vibrant series celebrating the legacy and ongoing contributions of the Black community in Montreal. Hosted by Gordon Weeks and Joe Zamal, each event is designed to engage, educate, and inspire through storytelling, film, and live performance. Discover the rich history, learn from trailblazers, and connect with others passionate about cultural heritage and empowerment. Sunday, March the 8th at 3 p.m., join us in a conversation of the Civil Rights Movement. Have we evolved? Hosted by Gordon Weeks with a guest panel. For more, check out uniamontreal334.com.
Alrighty. We are back. You are still on CJLO 1690, and this is still Death of the Mid-Range. I'm gonna apologize. We set up really, really quickly, and I played my own show promo. I promise that was not wanted. I don't need, you know, to just keep plugging my show away, even though it's a great show. So, little apology for all the other DJs at the CJLO Radio. I promise I will do a better job next time. But yeah, Samuel, my little question that I wanted to ask you before we move on to Big Denzel over there.
Let's do it.
Is so you told me you locked in after the Kawhi years, right? So
yes,
you
sir.
Went through a couple tanking years.
Yes,
right?
Sir.
I'm allowed to say the word because we're not
course,
in the NBA. I'm allowed. I remember when, well, the Wizards are still going through the tanking years. But what I loved about tanking basketball is that I started to grow fond of just random dudes that I know were going to stay. Like, for me, it's Jordan McRae, who played like two seasons for the Wizards. And just he was just the most inefficient, like 6'6 scorer you could ever see. Like, he will just put up shots. He'll finish with 30 points on 32 shots, and he did not care. And I wanted to know if you had any like niche little, you know, role players that came through your organization.
I fear that I was not the best tanking fan.
Expose them.
A wiener right here.
not that I checked out, but that it was getting tougher for me to watch Spurs games as the years went on. But it was a lot of guys that kind of didn't do that much with the Spurs that I like. One of the weirdest memories I have of being a Spurs fan is watching the Derek White trade go down and seeing that we got Romeo Langford.
Yeah, shout out.
In return. And thinking, cool. Oh, okay, we're going to be fine. We got Romeo Langford back in this trade. We're going to be like, you know, he's decent. He'll be a piece for the future. And he just, like, he did like a, like less than nothing for the Spurs.
Couldn't even tell you where he's at. Yes. Couldn't even like.
Yeah,
couldn't even tell you.
Do you guys know where he's playing right now?
Oh, hell no.
No. He was like, again, what did he's
top pick?
Just like Sharif Cooper.
Top prospect, my bad.
Yeah, like just like Sharif Cooper and Monty Bass. All these dudes that just came out of high school like with like a super 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 good reputation and just unfortunately couldn't convert.
Yeah.
So maybe no like any just niche role player that you loved then?
I mean, back when KJ was still like the fourth fifth option in like 2020, 2021. And again, I had no faith in him, but he was fun to watch.
Yeah.
Like
he's
was
a dog.
Back when he was, you know, dunking on every, you know, he got brawlic, man. But
he built.
He, you know, he was getting out in transition, you know, catching all those, you know, the lobs down, you know, 40. But
hey,
and I, you know, obviously credit to him. I was completely wrong about him the way that he developed and that he's become, you know,
yeah,
a real piece of this, you know, championship 100%. Contender.
Yeah. But I'm glad you bring it up because we'll talk about it later because I wanted to do a little segment on Keldon Johnson.
Okay.
I've really sung his prayers on the show and it's just really, really, really great. Denzel, man.
What's good, my guy?
Denzel, man.
Hey, that's what the meme is we own, baby.
If y'all saw how dripped up my man Denzel is right now, he wearing sunglasses inside. Hey, now, man. Talk about it, brother.
I had to come prepared, man. This ain't no joke. This is Death of the Mirror. This is CJ Lowe, you know? Got to show respect.
All right, my man. How did you become a Clippers fan, bro?
Interesting that you're asking that because I became a Clippers fan exactly around the year, the same year as you, my guy.
Yeah.
Like 2013, 2014. I think that was KD's MVP year, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Mm-hmm. I think you're cooking.
Yeah, that was my first time actually watching like the NBA. I've always been a big basketball head. I always play hoops, you know that. So I think the first time I actually tuned in, like watching ball, that was an OKC game. And he happened to be against the Clippers, you know? And that was when like Lob City was just getting like their foot on the ground and it was just beautiful basketball. When I was a kid, I wasn't really looking for the actual like playbook. I was looking to just get impressed highlights. You know, yeah. I was still a little kid. I was easy and impressionable. So I think the Lob City era was, to me, my introduction to the Clippers, and I just became a fan since.
Yeah, I mean, hey, Lob City was special, bro.
Yep.
Lob City was special. So do you have a favorite memory as a fan?
Oh yeah. And shout out to my Spurs fan, 2014, 2015 playoff. Hey, I had to. That was the breakout year for us.
Talk to him, bro. You know what I mean? Talk to him, man.
2014, 2015, you know, we defeated the champions, the San Antonio Spurs, in the 7-game series. Tough matchup. You know what I'm talking about. And of course, one of the moments that stuck into my brain was the CP3 floater, you know, last minute, like bad hamstring over Tim Duncan. That was just...
If I see an NBA highlight reel, we get to that moment, I always fast forward. I can't watch it.
Hey, this is why I slow up. You know, I slow motion that.
I mean, you got it. Honestly, bro, Lob City to me is even a little bit sad, because it's like...
Tell me about
if they could have just stayed healthy when it wasn't one,
healthy and united, mentally prepared too.
Yeah, because when it wasn't one, it was the other, bro. When CP3 was out, and then okay, Blake Griffin's gonna be healthy, and then when he's back, so that really sucked. I really, really liked that trio, and they were kind of like everybody's favorite underdog.
Yes,
you know, yes. Y'all still the Los Angeles Lakers little brothers. I'm just gonna put. I ain't trying to go against you, bro, but. I'm just saying. And kind of the
like
same question.
Like the bad child.
Yeah, I'm saying. But like, kind of like I said to Samuel, would you have any niche role players that came through your...
Ooh, I was thinking about this. I think I have a few, but if I had to pick one, I'm going to give a big shout out to my Cameroonian fellow. You know, I always had to big up my guys.
I know you want to
say Luke Malmute. Why? Because he's like a pioneer. To us, he's the first Cameroonian NBA player to actually like show us it was possible to make it. Mm. You know, so... Mm-hmm. When he came to the Clippers, to me, that was my favorite player off rip. He was where I was from. He came back every summer back home in Cameroon, show us love. So, to me, that was just a good coincidence. And
Luke and Bamute, if you don't know.
6'8".
Like, he, I ain't going to say he was tough, right? He was a good NBA player. But I'm saying what he did off the court is really special, especially, like, the way the NBA has expanded to Africa, especially West Africa and now North Africa. Luke Mbamute is one of the pioneers. Luol Deng as well.
Joel Embiid came from the Mbamute.
Exactly. Pascal Siakam too. And, you know, I mean, I'm from West Africa. I know you were from West Africa.
For sure.
Samuel's, you know, he got origins from West Africa. My brother, I see you. It means a lot. And you know, I feel like your legacy as an NBA player is obviously what you do on the court, but especially what you do off the court.
This is where it touches the lens, for sure. You know,
Denzel a hooper. Hey, if that knee didn't turn.
Hey, that knee.
Come on now. But how you feel about this season? Right, obviously you guys started really, really rough. But hey, now what? You're the 9th seed. You're one game back from being at 500.
Yeah.
How you feeling?
I feel like being a Clippers fan, it's just a lot of cardio work. You know? This season made no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
So we began like at the bottom of the crap.
Mm.
Literally, like we were losing a whole lot of games. Underachieving. Mm. The defense wasn't good. We were like the unction of the league, you know, old players all over. And suddenly we're just losing pretty much the half of the starting lineup.
Yeah.
And now we kind of back in contention. So that thing makes sense.
Yeah.
So if I had to describe it, it's unpredictable.
Yeah. How do you feel about the trades?
Which one?
Well, the losing Harden? losing Harden and then well, losing Harden, swapping Harden for Darius Garland.
Yeah.
And then selling high on Ivica Zubac, in my opinion. I feel like you guys sell high.
We did. To be honest, at first I was mad, but Lawrence Frank, our GM, did make it clear that we need to clear up some cap space this year. You know, I think the Clippers are in a strategic position right now where they're kind of planning on their draft capital, future, we're trying to free up some space, trying to make some money, we're trying to get some young players. This is the first time where I actually see the Clippers playing the young players a lot in the minute.
Yeah.
So even though we lost Harden and Zubac, who I love Zoo. I was so sad we lost Big Zoo.
Yeah.
I did understood the bigger picture at the end. Yeah. I did.
And I honestly, you can say young players with a capital Y because they have saved your season.
Oh my God.
Yannick Kona Niederhauser, Kobe Sanders, Jordan Miller. Honestly, all these dudes have played. They've like added fuel, rejuvenated.
The rise up to occasion, for sure.
Rejuvenated this squad that was looking so old. Yep. Honestly, no disrespect to my.
We were. Like,
Brook Lopez, CP3, they all looked a step behind.
Yeah, Batum.
Well, chill out on Batum, bro. That's my guy, bro. Don't talk about Batum like that.
Where the fuck Batum in? Oh, my bad.
You good. Don't talk about Batum like that. But, no, honestly, and I mean, maybe you can attest to that a little bit more, but the young players have really turned the season around.
They did. And they brought back that dynamic play that I really love. They hustled on defense. Mm-hmm. They take the drives. They physical. They tough. They don't rely on their skills. Like, necessarily, they rely on their will. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I feel the Clippers needed. We needed that boost. We needed that energy. We needed that youthful energy.
Yeah.
And the results are showing. We've been better than earlier this season, so I can't complain.
You were talking about how being a Clippers fan is like, you know, almost a cardiac arrest. But imagine Ty Lue, right? Ever since Tyronn Lue has been employed by the Clippers, I have never seen a coach have to adapt more than him, right? Getting to the playoffs, you don't have any of your starters. You have to play Russell Westbrook as a system, or Patrick Beverley has to play 35 minutes, or losing Kawhi, getting back Kawhi, losing Paul George, getting back Paul George.
Yes.
I mean, I've been so impressed. So impressed by Ty Lue.
Ty Lue doesn't get enough credit for how good of a player manager he is.
100%.
The amount of superstar, quote unquote, because being a superstar is also in your status. You know, we had Westbrook at some point. We had PG.
Yeah.
We had Kawhi, obviously. Harden. I can go on and on. CP3 came back. I think being able to manage all those egos, you know, as well as the playbook, as well as the defensive schemes, offensive scheme, being able to keep instill the confidence in the young guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think it takes a lot of work, and he hasn't necessarily been lucky in terms of injuries.
Yeah.
In terms of internal conflict, you know, because he's not necessarily the GM, neither the owner. So
we'll talk about that later. About
shout out Ty Lue, man.
Internal conflict. We'll get into that later. And last little question before we move on to Samuel. But how have you felt with the return? So Benedict Mathurin, Darius Garland, Isaiah Jackson got some burn against speedy recovery to Yannick, who went down for the rest of the season.
Yes,
but it allows Isaiah Jackson to get some burn. How you feel about the young guys coming in?
I like it. I think Benedict Mathurin is in a proving year right now. I think the positional differences, or maybe he didn't have his full on trust for the Pacers. The Pacers didn't really trust him for the future. I think they took a big bet by sending us Benedict, and I'm really glad we got him. And I think he has a chip on his shoulder, and he showed that he wants to be a franchise pillar.
Yeah.
And I think we watching, he still has like a year left, I think.
On his deal?
Yeah, I think he has a year left negotiation.
Has he signed an extension?
I don't think he did. I think that's the reason why he left.
Is he still on the rookie? Because y'all going to have to pay him. That's for sure.
Yes.
But also, Montreal Nord's very own, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's Montreal.
Benedict Mathurin. Hey, big shout out. All right. Now, Samuel.
And I feel like Garland is too early to talk about it.
Well, he ain't really
getting back in his...
He ain't really played yet.
Yeah.
You know, because he was injured and everything.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, we already know what Samuel going to say, bro. How do you feel, bro? How do you feel about this season? All right. My shoes are too dyed. There's too many diamonds on my shoes. Oh, my franchise player is just the GOAT.
Man, it is...
I mean, I'm gonna admit it. I didn't see us contending this early. I knew I knew Wemby was gonna be great. I knew like I knew the sun was gonna come up today. No, but I knew that I loved the Dylan Harper pick. I had no worries about him and Stephon Castle. I knew that Fox with a full season back was gonna be, you know, exactly the player we traded for. But yeah, I've been so impressed with the way that the roster has filled out around it. Like all the, you know, like all the small veteran pieces that we added, like Luke Kornet.
Oh my God, talk to me.
What a signing!
Yeah, I was so happy they signed him, and he got his bag too, well deserved.
I was seeing people like, oh wow, you know, the Spurs offseason signing is Luke Kornet. I was like, y'all are crazy. Like he's gonna be like, he's like exactly what we need, and I feel very, you know, vindicated by that. But no, Luke Kornet's been amazing. You know, Keldon Johnson, we obviously can't talk about him enough. You know, he six man of the year contention. Juju Champagny. You know,
we got his twin over there in Washington. tough family.
Yeah. But then, like, you know, the other players who are, you know, filling out the roster, Carter Bryant is finally coming into his own. You know, now that, you know, obviously Jeremy Sochan is off the roster. But and then like the guys down the roster, Bismack Biyombo,
great vet.
Bismack, shout out Bismack, yeah, Congo man, yeah. The house.
No, but the ascension from Wemby has just been unreal to watch.
Like, and I feel like it's even come in waves, right? Because he started so well, right? Mm-hmm. And then he had that injury. Then people were like, "Oh my God, Wemby is getting exposed." Because I don't even remember, but he had like that couple game stretch when he played the Suns. He played the Suns, and they were, like, being super physical with him.
Yep. Yeah.
And then people were like, oh, we figured out Wemby.
Yep.
And then he goes down with injury, comes back. And honestly, this is, like, oh, it's so deep into my brain. That game against OKC, when he comes back and he plays, like, what, like, 14 minutes, bro?
Yeah.
He plays 14 minutes. I feel like those were the greatest 14 minutes I've ever seen in my life, bro.
Yeah.
Like, his plus-minus was off. And so just him, and during that run that you guys have been on, I think you guys won, like, 15 of the last 16.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, just that one ugly loss.
Wow.
Yeah, oh, my God, Wembanyama, bro. Yeah. Oh, my God. How you feel about Wemby, man? Is there even words?
What do you say about this?
I mean, you just, like, there was a play against the Rockets, I think, last night. It was last night's game. And, you know, two teams, you know, that you really couldn't think about them being in. I mean, like, not all that different. But, like, one is clearly overachieving. One's clearly underachieving from what we thought at the beginning of the year. And there was a play. Fox had the ball on the left wing, and Wemby was like at in the high post, like right at the top of the key, and he gave it to, and Fox, you know, a little entry pass to Wemby, and Wemby threw it back to Steph Castle at the top of the arc, and he dove to the basket, and every single Rockets player followed him, not one. There was a defender like 2 feet from Steph Castle, and he dropped.
Yeah.
He dropped back to cover Wemby.
That's how good he is.
And so Wemby gets the ball to Steph. Steph hits the three. And it's like, that's legitimately how you guard him. You send all five players into the paint to guard him. And, you know, then you watch him like dribble behind the arc, and you have, you know, whoever it is ends up being, like, you know, your 6'8", 6'9" wing guarding him face up and putting a hand in the face of a 7'4" player because he is hitting threes at a, you know, 40% clip. Mm-hmm. And
it wouldn't be a problem, man.
And it's just, and I mean, even talking about that game last night, I didn't watch the games, but I watched the highlights, and there's a play where he just goes in transition.
Yeah.
And I think he goes like through four players.
Mm-hmm.
And Reed Sheppard is the lead defender. And I've never seen a man more scared in my life.
Yeah.
The look on Reed Sheppard's face, like, what am I supposed to do, bro?
Yeah.
And he's when he's on, he's so dominant because you cannot stop him, bro.
You can't teach that.
Like, you can't teach being 7'4" and doing all that. But you know what? I don't even want to spend too much time about Wemby because we've been knowing about Wemby.
Yeah.
What I want to talk about is like you say, you call him Juju Champagne, Devin Vassell,
Julian,
right? Yeah. Harrison Barnes. Yeah. The most impressive to me is Keldon Johnson.
Yeah.
Because what I've known from an outsider, outside your franchise, Keldon Johnson coming in, right, being a rookie, kind of struggling, and then I think it was that second year or third year,
yeah,
we started putting up a good amount of points.
Yeah.
As like, I don't know, second option
he,
or whatnot.
He very much took advantage of like the void left behind by, you know, and, you know, obviously, you know, credit him that he's been able to continue that on a contender. But like he fully took advantage of like when the Spurs were not very good to seize those minutes.
He was like he was a good scorer. I think he was averaging 18 or 19, something like that. And he was like, you know, getting a lot of on-ball opportunities. Mm-hmm. And now you have a wave of not only role players joining you, the superstar players.
Yeah, stars.
So now he's just been like kind of going down. Right? He's not even a starter anymore. Yeah. But I've been super impressed with how he's adapted.
Yeah.
Right.
And again, like the, I mean, our starting lineup the past few weeks has been, I mean, you know, for most of the season, it's been Fox, Castle, Champagny, Barnes, and Wemby. You know, that now that Sohan has, you know, kind of fell out of the rotation, then fell off the roster. But it's been like he's been getting like the significant sixth man minutes over Dylan Harper, which I think, you know, partly the archetype thing. You know, he's kind of the more, you know, the big body four who can, you know, kind of bang down low a little bit. But he is, yeah, he's been so impressive. And his attitude, like, you know, obviously with, you know, the other stars coming in, you know, like, I don't, you know, I mean, I don't think Keldon Johnson expected, you know, to be the star player when, you know, Wemby came in, you know. But, like, you know, with the other guys coming in, you know, obviously, you know, drafting Steph, trading for De'Aaron Fox, he's been so good at filling that, you know, role player role that every championship team really needs. And it's like him and Juju Champagne have impressed me so much this season. And like, it seems like it's not like weird, but the way he's like his 3-point shot.
Yeah.
And it, you know, cause earlier on he was just, you know, he was kind of a slasher. He was kind of, you know, the bench energy guy, but what they've needed him to do, you know, to kind of space the floor, clear the space for, you know, those great slashes that they have in, you know, Fox, Castle, you know, obviously Wemby, you know, when he's playing
Harper.
Yeah. And he has fully stepped into that role and fully embraced it. And I just think that's so impressive from a player like him who's been, you know, he's a veteran now.
Like, on this team, 100%.
Like, not in the sense of like being old, but like in the sense of he's been here since, you know,
the longest.
Yeah, like 18.
Yeah, 18-ish.
Yeah, 19. Yep. No, but I love that you attested that because we had, high school coach on the show a couple months ago. And he was just, you know, telling the tale of find out what your team needs.
Yeah.
Right. And then you feel that need. And I feel like this is what Keldon embodies perfectly. It's like, what does my team need? They need me to be gritty. Yeah. They need me to crash the offensive board. I can stretch the floor sometimes. I can go for putbacks. And I feel like it's just for every young player should just follow that blueprint. Because you cannot lose. Yeah. You cannot lose having that mentality.
Especially today with your like abundance of talent in the NBA.
I'm saying, bro.
If you're trying to like stay in the league.
Because he's talented. Like, we've seen him. He can score. He can get past his defender. But you know what? That might not be
situations.
The most efficient.
Situation.
And I honestly think, like, Harrison Barnes is, like, the perfect person for him to learn from. Or at least, like, play behind. Because you think about what his role was on, like, the 15, 16, 17 Warriors was. To be kind of that, you know, that younger, you know, kind of bench scorer type role.
Yep.
Behind Steph, Clay, KD. And
all these dudes, like Nick Batum. I feel like him and Nick Batum are so interchangeable. They're just
they've been the top guys, and then they learn how to retract and serve the purpose of this team.
But what I was curious about, and I'm going to take the advantage of being with a real Spurs fan in presence. But there was a lot of talk this summer, and we talked about it a lot on the show after the draft of you having quote unquote 3-point guards, right? And a lot of people, most of them outside your fan base, were very adamant about either trading Steph Castle, either trading De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
How have you felt about the 3-guard line? Because I feel like it's really worked out.
Yeah,
well.
No. I was very firm early on that I didn't think we should trade anyone. I mean, there was no way we were going to trade Fox. There was no way we were going to trade Castle. And there was no pick better on the board than, I mean, we weren't going to take, you know, anyone down, you know, we weren't going to take Connick and Nipple. We weren't going to take, you know, Ace Bailey. Like, Dylan Harper was the right pick there.
100%.
And I think that, and, you know, you talk about attitude, you know, Dylan Harper, he could have been, you know, he was, maybe should have been, you know, a star on a lottery team, you know.
100%. The Wizards. I was so mad. No, I swear to God, I'm trying to hold it in. I swear to God, I was so mad, bro. I love Dylan Harper so much, and I watched him, my records, but I... Anyways, sorry. I mean, cut you off. Sorry, go ahead.
It's I mean, it's tough being a Spurs fan too, just with our embarrassment of riches. You know,
you know what, Sam? I can't even right now.
He's
you know what, bro? I'm not even gonna look at you. I'm not even gonna look at you. Know why? Because y'all know y'all should have never been in that gosh darn lottery, bro.
I agree.
Y'all jumped up so high, bro.
I'm never getting invited back,
bro. I'm saying, bro, we finished. I'm sorry. You know, this is really sensitive for me. We finished sixth. The lowest we could have finished in the draft was sixth, and we got the sixth pick, bro. And you know what? I'm gonna move on. I'm done. I'm done talking to you. Denzel.
What's up?
To get back on the Clippers.
Yep.
I can't believe we've gone 40 minutes and we haven't even talked about Mr. Kawhi.
Woo! The Claw.
Finally healthy.
Boy man.
Finally healthy. Career high in numbers. In points. Two steals.
Yeah.
50, 40, 90 almost.
I would say career high in pretty much everything.
I checked. It was only his points.
Okay, points.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Kawhi, what can I say? He's playing like a top five player this year.
100%.
He's been pivotal for the maintenance of the Clippers in contention. I think with Kawhi, you know, I'm a little bit conflicted, you know. He's obviously good. He's obviously great. He showed us plenty of times that he's can be the best player in the championship team, I thought. But this year, he's just been on a tier, man. Like, defensively, I don't think I've seen Kawhi play that much defense since his...
It's been good. Because I feel like he was an amazing defender. And I feel like he kind of plateaued a little bit when he was, like, getting back from injury. And I feel like this year, he's really locked in.
Yeah, he's putting back on defensive effort. And I think maybe that's his role as a veteran to show the young guys that, you know, this is what you need to do in order to be in the league, stay in the league, be able to play well, be able to have contracts and get some money. So I'm really, really happy with Kawhi's performance this year, especially because he converts to win as well. So that's something that we definitely need, especially at that time. It's almost the end of the season, so we should definitely rack up some wins.
But kind of on that same wavelength, you touched on it. What I've been super impressed about, and I never thought that could be a progression for Kawhi, has been his leader kind of role.
Leadership.
I've never seen Kawhi so outspoken.
That's
whether it
saying.
Be in press conferences, he's given a lot of credit to the young guys, like we say, Jordan Miller, especially Yannick, Kona Niederhauser.
Shout out, my boy Yannick.
And even there was a clip after a game, I think a week and a half ago, where Benedict Mathurin ended up taking the last shot, and it was like an open three-pointer, and he missed. And Kawhi, right after, just goes to him, and you can see on his lips, he says, "That's a good shot. That's a good shot." And I've been so impressed to kind of see Kawhi be so outspoken.
Yeah, I mean, Kawhi always been labeled as the quiet guy, the ones that doesn't really like gather the truth. But I think he's on the other side of his career now. You know, he's 34, 35, and he's coming to an age where he has to mentor those going guys. But he's still good, so he's definitely showing out this year. He's efficient. He shows effort. And I think everybody follows along with that.
Yeah.
And this is why the Clippers have been so successful. But he has been pretty much the face of the franchise.
Yeah. Kind of bring it back to another point I had. If this episode could serve as anything, as we're gearing up right towards the end of the season, I'm happy we get to do this because I get to know more about franchises that are going to be in playoffs, right?
Yep.
And somebody who hasn't paid attention to the rest of the season, this could be an episode where you get to know these franchises and how they'll match up in the playoffs.
Yep.
Right now, you guys are in the play-in.
Yes.
You're in the ninth seed. I think you're
a game away.
Yeah, game and a half away, I believe.
Game and a half.
From the eighth seed.
Yes.
But you guys are, I think you're far from the seventh seed. Regardless, what I'm curious about is when the Clippers do get in the play-in or the playoffs, because it will happen, because the 11th seed is very far.
Yeah.
How do they match up versus the rest of the West? And my second question is, apart from Kawhi Leonard, and I feel like we saw it this week when they played the Spurs, when they phase guard Kawhi, when they don't allow Kawhi to catch the ball, who can actually step up and who can you actually rely on in that kind of playoff setting?
So So this is pretty much the big question, right? If Kawhi is like sort of double teamed or there's like a scheme against Kawhi, how do we find a way to keep scoring? How do we find a way to stay efficient? And that would depend on a few people. I think the first person that I wanted to call out a little bit was John Collins, because I think John Collins is a key player for our success. You know, he's been pretty much inconsistent this year. He shots the ball really well. He's been a really good spot up, but with the loss of Zoo and the fact that we don't really have this defensive big and presence, you know, we've been a team that hasn't really being a good rebounding team, for example, you know. So I think I would expect definitely John Collins to pick it up a little bit. Obviously, Mathurin
needs
to find consistency. You know, he showed us that he can score 40 balls, 20, 30 points. We have DG coming back from injury. So hopefully, he could find his steps, get comfortable. He looks pretty good during the first games. I mean, he played pretty well the last game against Memphis. He dropped, 21?
Mm-hmm.
So this is promising. So, yeah, I think pretty much consistency from the guys, the top guys. I would say Darius Garland and Benedict, as well as John Collins, are definitely the ones that I'm looking at. And I'm like, okay, guys, we will need y'all. We need you to be consistent. We need you guys to be able to play make. We need you guys to be able to make the open shot, because Kawhi is not going to always be available. He's going to be double teamed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be trapped. So consistency from the new guys, for sure.
You know what? We got more coming up another way. Little last ad break of the day. So enjoy that one. Death of the Midrange family. We be right back.
Have you ever wondered what your favorite characters would listen to? Better yet, imagined a soundtrack for your favorite movie or book? If the answer is yes, then tune into Something for the Mood every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. only on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm your host, Zoe, and I invite you to explore a new topic with me through music both new and old, but always funky, each week. To quote the wise words of iconic duo Chibo Motto, you got to know your chicken. And if you do, you'll tune into Something for the Mood every week. See you all there.
If you're interested in audio storytelling at all, volunteer with CJLO's news department. We'll teach you the ins and outs of audio journalism, no experience needed. You'll learn interviewing, scripting, recording, editing, and we'll support you every step of the way on your journey to producing your own original reporting. We also take a lot of pride in our local focus and coverage of the issues often forgotten by mainstream outlets. Join the team and get your voice on air by filling out a volunteer application form at cjlo.com/volunteer. Or come to one of our weekly pitch meetings, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Loyola campus, CC430. If you're interested in...
My bad. Welcome back. Death of the Midrange family. You are still on CJLO 1690. We about to wrap up. You know, we got 10, 15 minutes to go. Has been really enjoyable, y'all. Really, really enjoyable. I got to say,
this is fun.
I'm enjoying myself, y'all. I'm enjoying myself.
Shout out CJLO, man.
This man Denzel is full of shout outs.
I'm just happy to be here, man.
And kind of flipping it back on you, Samuel.
Yeah.
Because you guys are the actual contenders. No offense, Denzel.
Wow.
If I can, you know. But
watch us beat this person in the playoff, man.
Oh, brother.
I think
that'd be a fun series.
That would be a fun one.
We just saw it was a close game, and you know, obviously.
We blew that one. Let's be honest.
You guys were up 20.
We blew that one,
bro. Hey, Brook Lopez legacy game, man. He had 26 or something like that.
How many shots he took?
Not that many, bro. Don't get on Brook, bro. Don't get on Brook
like
Brooke. I like Brook too.
Brooke.
But okay, so just there's a lot of series first I would like to see before that one, if I may, y'all.
Of course.
But what I've been really excited to ask you, Samuel, and I hope you will bring some clarity to me. I love Wembanyama. Obviously, Wembanyama is French. He's the French GOAT. I'm half French, and I love Wemby.
Yeah.
I have noticed one thing, though, and I've noticed it in the Olympics, and I noticed it this season when I've watched him.
Yeah.
I feel like when people start to beat up on Wemby a little bit, and I'm not talking about fouling necessarily. I'm talking about just, you know, the little tugging, the little elbows when he tries to post up, the things that the ref can't really see, right?
Yeah.
And I saw it against... their first game against Detroit.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, second game he had 40 points, which was a great come. He's great at coming back after, even against the Suns. He's great at just having bounce back games.
Yeah.
So when he's getting roughed up like that, I feel like Wembanyama is drawn away from the basket and he'll shoot a lot more jumpers, which would then lead him to be way more efficient and score way less points. A lot of games, in these games that I've noticed, he'll score 10 points, 12 points, and I feel like he's taken out of the offense.
Yeah.
And those are the games that usually the Spurs lose, because if Wembanyama needs to be the spearhead, even though they have a really, really good collective around him.
Yeah.
So how do you feel? Because, you know, when come playoff time, a lot less fouls are being called, especially the ones on the floor.
Yeah.
Above the three, a lot less fouls are called. How do you think you'll be able to match up in his first playoff run?
Yeah. I think, the first thing to say is obviously you talk about, getting the experience during the regular season. And I think that, if you want to say anything about Wemby, it's that, it's very easy for him to lock in, and especially throughout, you know, the like you said, he's very good at having bounce back games. Mm-hmm. And I think he can, you know, obviously you never want to have like a bad first game, but it's going to be very interesting to see how he bounces back. If he does have a bad first playoff game, you know, bad first game of a series, you know, getting used to a new opponent. But I have all the faith in him that he will bounce back even if he has a bad first game. Yeah. But like more in the context of, you know, that physicality, I think he needs to embrace it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he knows that he's the star player. Like, he knows that he is, like, you know, he can say, you know, obviously, you know, he can say, you know, oh, I'm, you know, one of the players out there on the floor, you know, it's a team effort, you know, all the typical stuff. But at the end of the day, he's the player that teams come to stop. And I think he recognizes that. And the first thing I would say is that he should welcome it. Like, he's mm-hmm. the ultimate competitor. He is, you know, you can see how much he cares about basketball.
He does.
And that, you know, like a playoff series like that, he's gonna relish it. Like, he's gonna relish the fact that he is in the playoffs for the first time in his career. And, you know, you talk about, you know, you're in the playoffs, you don't really need much more motivation than that. But I think specifically if they start to get to him, you know, they start to throw those double triple teams at him, you know, start to, you know, get at him before he can get into the paint. I think they should use, you know, more of those big, like those big to small actions, because they have good cutters, yeah. They have good slashers, and they need to work those, you know, those Dylan Harper, those Stephon Castle, yeah. De'Aaron Fox drives into the offense. And granted, they've been good this season, but, you know, the fact that they haven't needed to rely on them so much mm-hmm. is, you know, says a lot about the Spurs offense. So, and especially in, you know, you can say that, you know, once the playoffs start, you know, the teams start to pack the paint, they start to, yeah. you know, really, you know, clamp down on those, you know, quick, twitchy guards. Mm-hmm. But one, we have three of them.
Yeah.
And two, we also have the shooters to kick out to. So if mm-hmm. they do decide to pack the paint, and Wemby in this case is one of those shooters.
Yeah.
So I feel very good about the Spurs offense. And obviously, you know, that gets even better with the fact that, you know, Wemby is playing at an all NBA level. But the fact that, like, and like we've seen it throughout the season, we've seen them adapt when Wemby's out. It's like,
yeah,
because you, when Wemby's out and they go to, usually it's Luke Kornet in the starting lineup, mm-hmm. and, you know, shocker, Luke Kornet is not Wemby. No, but but the way they, you know, he's a good shooter, mm-hmm. You know, he has a little bit of, you know, he can pass a little bit, he is, you know, good at the things that, you know, Wemby is also good at, but that aren't like his defining traits. But the way they, you know, defer to De'Aaron Fox, the way they defer to Stephon Castle and really let them go to work and get downhill is, I think, a good sign of things to come for the Spurs in the playoffs.
But that's kind of what, and I feel like it's a redundant question at the end of the day, because one, I agree with the take of maybe if you play more of that double big lineup that I haven't seen crazy amounts of, but mm-hmm. playing more of that double big lineup will allow Luke Kornet to do more of the rough and tug, and then allow, you know, Wemby kind of roam more on offense and maybe not have to deal with the opposing team's starting center or whatnot. Yeah. And secondly, I feel like once it does get to playoff time, it will be on Wemby to make the right decisions off of his attention.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is that he's definitely going to garner, like you said, he's going to garner a hell of a lot of attention. And if I'm matching up against the Spurs, you know what I'm saying? Telling myself, beat us, but anybody but Wemby.
But Wemby. Yeah.
So it's going to have to be on Castle. It's going to have to be on De'Aaron Fox. It's going to have to be on Dylan Harper. And especially yep. those shooters going to have to shoot in the playoffs, which then leads me to my other question. I've been concerned about De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
I've watched there and there. I haven't followed every game, but I've been concerned about De'Aaron Fox yeah. because over the last 15 games, he's averaging 16 points, 6 assists. Yes, they are 14-1.
Yeah.
But he's shooting 29% from three, and he's taking a lot of them. Should we be worried? Or is he going to get it back?
I think we should be, to be honest.
Definitely yeah. should be.
If only because at this point we are contenders, and it's disheartening to see, you know, I think who we pretty much have consensusly decided is, you know, like 1A, 1B guard on this team, because, you know, that speaks to what Steph's done this year.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously the way he started the year, you know, really, you know, I think he also had a little bit of a slow start to the year. He came into his own and right around November, you know, really get into, you know, seeing what that Fox Wemby lineup was, you know, kind of looking like starting to, you know, we were getting a better idea of it because we didn't really see it much
yeah.
When he first got traded from the Kings, in the winter last year. But he the because, like, you know, the stereotype, or I guess, you know, the what, you know, Fox has been known as, you know, he's the fastest guard in the league. He's the downhill driver. He's the guy who's just going to, you know, outspeed you on the way to the basket. He's not, you know, he was never really relying on his outside shot or his mid-range game to, you know, score points and be an efficient scorer. And in this case, it is worrying because that's kind of the role he's going to have to fill if, you know, we do get into the playoffs and he's not, you know, his shots aren't falling. You know, he can't get to the paint as much anymore because it's, you know, so full with, you know, not only defending Wemby, but also defending, you know, just the paint in general. And that is, you know, that's where you start to get a little bit worried about the Spurs, you know, like, because then, you know, obviously, you know, Wemby hasn't had playoff experience, but he's had Olympic experience. He's had, you know,
like, professional experience.
Yeah, he's had, you know, FIBA experience. Yep. And the only other player on the roster, you know, besides Harrison Barnes, I guess, who's had extensive playoff and not even extensive playoff experience is
Cornette, too.
Yeah. But, you know, like, Fox is the player that they're going to, you know, they're going to look to in the moments where Wemby's really getting doubled. Mm-hmm. And and at least for looking at Wemby, I think he is smart enough to know when the ball should go to Fox and when it shouldn't. And, you know, that's going to be another thing that he has to deal with. And, you know, you don't want to put too much on him. But I do think that the way this team is structured right now, they don't need, and it is, and especially if Fox's shot isn't falling, they don't need him to, like, be this, you know, super super high, like, they need him to play well, but they don't need him to be, you know, King's Deer and Fox. Like, no, they have the players on the back end.
I get you, and I think that's a good point by him having to be, they're going to look at him because he has the most experience out of all the guards you guys have on the roster, because you have a lot of young guards.
It's weird for me to say this, but if Wemby isn't playing well, then if Wemby isn't the same offensive force, then I feel okay because he'll contribute in other ways, and we have other players to get to get involved.
You guys have one of the best collective.
Yeah. If Wemby and Fox both aren't playing well, I still like up to their offensive potential, I still feel decently about them. And then, but then, like, getting into, okay, now Wemby, Fox, and Steph aren't, you know, obviously, but obviously, at that point, your top three players aren't playing well, you're not going to win.
But with a couple minutes we got left, y'all, I had a couple, a little question for both of y'all. I'll let you start, Denzel.
What's up?
And maybe it's not even, the trade deadline has passed. Maybe it's not relevant anymore to talk about it. And I told myself I wouldn't even talk about it on the show because I'm kind of beefing with Giannis right now.
Okay. I see where you're going.
Hey, what you did with that betting platform was lame. Okay, Giannis, if you hear me. But you guys have both been in the Giannis rumors. Are you saying yes, Denzel? Are you saying yes? And if so, to what extent? Giannis to the Clippers.
When?
This offseason.
This offseason?
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you giving up? Are you giving up the pick if you get it?
I'm doing it.
You're giving up this year's
pick? You can take it. And the reason why I'm saying this, and the reason why I asked you when, is because our timeline is really tricky, you know?
Super tricky.
I think we're on Kawhi's last prime, not prime, but, like, good years. So pairing Kawhi and Giannis with a whole bunch of maybe shooters and, like, good role players, that could be scary.
So you want everything, bro. So you might not even have enough right now to trade for him.
I think we do.
You trade, like, I don't know, Mathurin.
Yeah, we trade Mathurin.
Y'all got Brad and Beal. Brad.
Yeah, we find a deal with Brad. Might have to, like, maybe throw a little young player in the mix.
A lot of young players. But
I'm doing it. I think the Clippers, we're in the position where we do not want to tank right now. We want to sort of keep trying. And why not taking Giannis? Why not take the bet? This is Los Angeles. At the end of the day, it's a good market for him. He can definitely come and make a name for himself. And him and Giannis on the defensive wings, like, come on now.
And in 15 seconds, can you just, little message for all Clippers fans for the NFC, and what you wishing for?
The future is bright. Mm-hmm. I know we had a little turmoil. The trade deadline was pretty rough, but we did the right thing. We're clearing space, and we're back in the rebuild culture that we should have been in from the gate. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Denzel.
Keep faith.
And then in 30 seconds, before we do the outro.
Of course.
What can, first of all, just say yes or no to the Giannis trade. No need to get, and then what you can wish for the rest of the season for the Spurs.
I'm gonna say yes.
Yeah.
The way our guards are playing right now, if there's one that, you know, we see doesn't develop in the playoffs or doesn't, you know, play well,
yeah,
and we feel like we need to get, you know, another interior presence, you know, God, I'm just dreaming about that Wemby Giannis defensive front court.
Oh, we are, bro. Wow.
But you know, but if, you know, if Steph does, you know, like, and a lot of people are saying we should have sold high on Castle, you know, at the trade deadline. But I think if, you know, he doesn't perform over the offseason, it's a real consideration.
Yeah. Hey. Samuel, Denzel, my brothers, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being with me today on this special Death at a Mid-Range episode. To all the listeners, thank you so much. It's been real. As always, have an amazing week, and I promise I'm not missing another episode. I promise I will be here next week, and we got a lot more to talk about as the NBA season is wrapping down. Yeah, take care, everybody. Let's run it. Ovenani nduzo kasiye, ovenani sonjae saa.